So we have done five verses of this text called Kaivalya Upanishad. Today we won't do the sixth verse. Reason is that in the first five verses, we had learned about the technique of meditation, the need for meditation, and how through detachment one can reach the highest, not through action, not through work, but through detachment. And that is the number one requirement for spiritual growth, is dispassion, detachment. So last week we had, of course, Vimalji. The week before we had talked about the technique of meditation, how you sit alone and, you know, quieten your mind and observe your breath and all the technique that we already know. Then we had talked about what is the nature of the self, which is peaceful, which is beyond agitation, without disturbance, and pure, uncontaminated. That is the nature of the self within. Now the verse number 6 and 7, which we will do the next 2 weeks, the verse number 6 talks about meditating on God as formless, without form. And then the verse number 7 talks about meditating on God with form. One is formless and one is form. So I thought today we'll make it a discussion where I will maybe ask you, all of you, what do you think? Rather than me speaking, we'll talk about what is your opinion. Maybe we'll start from here. What do you think? Is God form or formless?
I think God is formless, but for me, it's much, much easier to envision a form in my mind, especially, you know, that deity is in temple, and meditate on that form. That actually is a way to reach that formless. I consider that thing. And I feel more love and compassion and a more personal attachment if I do that.
That's very good. How about you?
I'm exactly the opposite.
Okay.
When I think of God, I think that God is formless. It does make it harder. I also think of you know, like Sri Krishna or whatever, but and that's always a problem because of that, because, you know, why are you special? God is everywhere. And so it's kind of something I haven't come to terms with.
Okay, how about you?
For me, God is formless, yes. But as there are, I need somebody I can relate to, or I can, you know, can see. So for me, you know, Guru Nanak, I go the reach to God, like I need a teacher, I need somebody, and that's a middleman, or you call it whatever. So I get a satisfaction when I meditate. My Guru Nanak is there in front of me, and that's my prayer, my meditation is. And that's how I feel contented or satisfied, reaching through him to God. Yes, I know that why God is formless, but I need somebody
to guide you.
Guide me.
Okay, what about you?
Well, the ultimate, which is supreme consciousness, and then as individuals we experience as a higher self, that's formless, yet all form is embodied by that. So you could say both, yet form can pass away, and what's left is the formless, and that'll always be, but God embodies the formless as well.
Thank you. Sorry, anything more?
That's it.
Tony?
For me, it's the formless, because the form, you know, gives God is limitless, has limitations, human limitations. so I see this more of a formless sense of God. But also, you know, for me, God comes from the word, German word for good. So I perceive God as that which is good. And that's, you know, the formless. I see it more as the formless.
Okay, I'll ask the next question. Are you form or formless?
Me personally?
Yes.
I'm a form sometimes. But coming back to God, I think it's both, because it's formless because it's in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a form because you have to pray to somebody. You have to. We are more, as humans, we are more concerned. So we have to have a figure, we have to have an imagination to whom to pray, to have the direction of the praying. So, but basically it's formless because it's everywhere in everything.
Right, so it's not limited. Okay, Barbara, are you form or formless? Huh?
Later on.
When is that?
After we died, we became a formless.
So then you can only realize God after death?
No, God. We talk
or
about
you can only know him after
personally,
death?
Personally, I'm a form, but God is formless.
Right. What do you think?
I think I'm form, and I think I'm form because I've got the equipment. And that's what gives me form. God inside of me is formless. And God and the Spirit and the Absolute, it doesn't have a form, and I know I can't possibly understand that. And I've tried meditating both on forms and formlessness. And when I meditate on God as a form, whether it's the, you know, the Christian God with the old man with the flowing white hair and all that,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, Krishna, or even some of the female goddesses, Saraswati or Kali or something, I get my mind just gets too tied up in the visual, and I can't quiet my mind. And I find that if I meditate on God, or if I meditate on nothing, then I'm able to quiet my mind, and everything kind of shuts down, and I feel more successful when I meditate on God as formless.
Are you form or formless?
Well, I perceive myself as form, but I realize reading scriptures that the ultimate goal is to realize the formless in unity. You know, but I'm not at the stage. Even when I meditate, it's all form, and I know it's a long journey for me, and to reach that, I think the quest is really quite a barrier to overcome.
Are you form or formless?
No, the essence is formless. We keep talking about we only occupy the body for a while, but then I always think in form, so it's just hard to I really believe I'm formless.
Do you believe you're formless?
Yes.
Okay. How to know formless or God with a form? Can you answer that? The third question. How to know God as formless or with form? You know, is it the same method for both, or is there any difference? Somebody says, I love God as form, and somebody says, I love God as formless. Is there any difference? Yeah.
I think it's both. It's called, it has no limitation.
Right.
It's not possible to define. So God is everything. It's both. But if I say form, unavoidable, with my mind, when I say form, I relate to the humankind. But now when we know more and more about about the galaxies, about the universe, who is still being created, it will be pretentious. Form, human form, something that I can recognize. I think God is beyond our attempt to define, to capture in one concept. We believe that this is like the universe. It's both, it's form and it's energy. It's changing constantly. Before I had the idea about form, but now I'm thinking more and more that it's a combination of both.
How would we know? Is there any difference between trying to know God as form or formless?
I think it's just kind of tying into what she said down there about how if you have the equipment, the mind, body, and intellect, then you're taking form. I think that's probably the most simple way to recognize formless versus form. But from a more spiritual aspect, how they're saying, you know, we are in the body form, but our essence and our soul is formless.
How would you know God? What is the difference between trying to know God as form or formless?
I think it's the same thing. It's just a different way of looking at it.
Can you expand on that?
No. I would just say before I started these classes that honestly, I mean, this is embarrassing, but God lived up there and he was this, you know, big man with big beard, white robes and all this stuff. And, you know, as I progressed down the path, I mean, there's been, we've talked about this, you know, different forms that I've tried to attach myself to, and it just doesn't seem to work. So more than anything now, I just see him as formless, and I'm formless, but I'm occupying a body right now. And I think you have to respect the body and your mind and intellect, but it's like, intellectually, I get it, but it's how you act in the world that maybe you don't really get it like you think you do, emotionally, maybe.
The back.
I don't think anybody can answer how what form is God in. Is he formless or form? I don't think anybody can really answer that because God is one everywhere and in what is form.
So he's both, you're saying?
I think that God is formless and we have a divine spark within ourselves, and it is the intention that we set forth that creates the form. And I think that we know we are in the right to qualify that, as through our actions when we know how it feels in our body, like a good action or service unto others, compassion, intention, feels better within the body because you're acting out of love to honor the formless God by putting form to action and intention.
I think all of you pretty much did the talk for me. I didn't have to do much, but I'll just expand a little bit on what I have understood, because the thing is, form and formless is like water and ice. Water has no particular form, right? Water is formless. If you put it in a cup, it shapes, takes the shape of a cup, in a glass, in the ocean, it is, you know, vast. And then, well, when it becomes ice, then it takes a particular form. It gets limited to that ice form. So, but the essence of both is the same. The essence of both is H2O. Whether it's in the ocean, you know, spreading for thousands of miles, or whether it's water vapor, you know, going up in the atmosphere and, you know, becoming cloud, or in ice, the essence is the same, H2O. So similarly, it is that one essential nature called Om or Brahman or Father in Heaven, you know, or whatever name, or Muslims call it Allah. That's why they are very much opposed, you know, to idol worship, because they are very much opposed to, you know, giving him a form. But the point is that the difference between knowing him as form or formless, the question is, am I form or formless? That's what when somebody asked Raman Maharishi, is God form or formless? His answer was, are you form or formless? if I think of myself to be this limited entity, this limited form called Anil or Diana, or, and I have this particular shape, I'm male or female, Indian, American, white, black, all those limited concepts, if I have about myself, then it is easier to love God as a particular form. As long as you think, God, I have a form, then it is easier to love God as a particular form. And it can be any form, because that one formless, the problem with trying to know the formless is that as long as I am identified with the form, it becomes impossible to know the formless. Because when you say formless, what does it mean? It has no limits. Because the moment it has a limit, you say, okay, it extends from here to Venus, or extends from here to the furthest star and ends, then that becomes a form. It extends from here to the furthest star, extends from here to heaven, and that's it. So that becomes a particular form. The moment you say it is formless, that means there is no limit. Formless means limitless. Because when there is a form, it immediately gets limited, whether it's Krishna or Jesus or Buddha or Guru Nanak or whatever. So, but the form is easier to love. See, love is a very powerful vehicle to reach that truth. So when I love God, then you love him as a particular form. And it's okay, you know, to say, okay, I love Krishna or I love Jesus. But then you have to make sure that you're not limiting God to that particular form, that form alone is it is that one infinite consciousness who out of compassion for us has taken all these forms. Like we even see forms here in the different pictures. Especially in Hindus, we have a lot of forms. And when we worship an idol, if you think that this idol is God, then you are limiting it. What you can say is that God is in this idol, and that's why I worship the idol, but God is everywhere. But the idol represents, just as when you see the national flag, you know, the stars and stripes, everybody gets up and salutes, and somebody says, what are you saluting? It's a piece of cloth. You know, I'm going to step on it. You say, no, no, no. If you step on it, you know, you're insulting my nation. You say, that's not your nation. It's just a piece of cloth, has stars and stripes. No, no, that represents my country. And so that's why we respect that flag. So similarly, the form represents the formless. If God is everywhere, then he's also in the form. See, that's why worshiping the form, they say, what do you mean by that? They say, God is everywhere. But if he is everywhere, he's also in that form. But when I develop a relationship, and that is very important, that one should develop a relationship with God, a relationship of love, not of fear, so that form becomes easier. And especially along with the form, we have so many stories. If you look at Jesus' life, so many beautiful stories about how he lived and how he preached and how he, you know, helped the people and how he performed miracles. You read Krishna's life, was so full of adventure, excitement, so mischievous. Look at Ram, look at Buddha, what he went through. And so the stories make us, it is like they personify God for us. They make God as appearing on earth. God appeared on earth and he appeared, why? To spread this message. And so what happens is that the message, which is abstract, which is not very clear, becomes clear to us when we read the stories of God, then we read his teachings, whether it's in the Bible or the Quran or the Guru Granth Sahib or the Bhagavad Gita. So when I worship God as a form, it is with love. When you, or you can even love, and it love can be as of many kinds, you know, father and child, or mother and child, or friend, or beloved. But in the case of the formless, when it is formless, that means it is all pervading. It is everywhere. What is formless? It is all pervading. When it is all pervading, it pervades everything in the universe. It pervades my body, mind, intellect, the perceiver, feeler, and thinker, the ego, and the objects, emotions, and thoughts of this universe. So when everything is pervaded, then how can I be separate? See, as a form, you have this duality that I and God are separate, and that's okay. You can love God as a particular form with duality. A lot of people say, I do not want to become one with God. I want to keep on loving God as a duality and develop a relationship of love, which is okay. But when you worship it as the formless, then what happens is it is all pervading and there is total identification. Then I, that ego, disappear. That's why we say, nah, I am that, you know, soham. When we meditate, you meditate on, you can start out by meditating on the form, but ultimately the form disappears in that silence and you experience God's presence within. And when you experience that presence within as Om or as Brahman or as that consciousness, then automatically you identify yourself as formless. So when we meditate, we generally meditate upon me, that formless, because I and that consciousness are one. The moment you say I and that consciousness are one, then there is total identification, then there cannot be a form. That's number one. Number two, as we said, form becomes limited and sometimes it can lead to extremist philosophy, it can lead to fanaticism. So you see God as a particular form, but what you say, that as I said, the essential nature is same. And when you see, even if you see God with the form, and you say, okay, Jesus or Buddha or Krishna, and he is my creator, he created me, he takes care of me, he loves me, he gives me life, he gives me the body, mind, and intellect, and therefore I'm grateful to God. You know, we have this attitude of gratitude. That's what they say, one should be always grateful. But then that one who created me also created everybody. So either way, whether you love God with form or formless, the end result of all is love all. See God in all and serve all. So the end result, when you love God, whether even if you love him as formless, then he is all pervading. He is there in everybody. He is also there in the chair. You also take care of your inanimate objects. You know, your, like, there is this story about this Buddhist monk who was a great teacher. I think I told this story one time before, but it's worth repeating. So this man walks in. He's very disturbed. You know, he said, I walked for 15 miles to come and see you. I have a lot of problems. And he falls at his feet. Before he falls at his feet, you know, he's not supposed to walk in with shoes. So he throws his shoes on one side, one here and one there. And then he falls at his feet and says, teacher, please help me. Please save me. I have a lot of questions. Teacher says, get out of here. So he says, I walked for 15 miles to come and ask you a question. You're telling me to get out? He said, yeah, who brought you here? Your shoes. And if you have no respect for the shoes that walked with you 15 miles, you're throwing them here and there, how can you learn the truth? So the point is that if you see God everywhere, you also see him in your shoes, in your car, in your chair, in inanimate and animate objects, in all plants, all birds, all insects. So that total identification comes in either way. Either whether you love him as form or love him as formless, the total identification, total love, total oneness is there. And so it really doesn't matter whether you love God as form or formless. The point is that either way, it should lead to total identification. That God is everywhere, is also within me as life, number one. Number two, everything is God. Because the result is nothing but the cause. Swami Chinmayananda says, what is the effect? It is, the effect is nothing but the cause in a different form. Like mud is the cause and the effect are the pots. You know, the mud pots and the cups and the saucer. So what are they? They are cause in different forms, right? You see gold, Gold comes in different forms as necklace and bracelet and, you know, anklet and all of those, ring. So gold appearing in different forms is called the ornaments. So what is cause? What is effect? Effect is cause in a different form, right? That is clear. Second is that from the effect, if you remove the cause, nothing remains. Right? From the ornaments, you remove gold. What remains? Nothing. From all the pots, you remove mud. What remains? Nothing. So similarly, this whole universe is the effect and God is the cause, right? We say God is the cause. So cause appearing in different forms becomes the effect. So God appearing in different forms, God is the cause, we all are the effect. So what are we? Just as all the pots are nothing but mud, all the ornaments are nothing but gold, so all of us are nothing but that one divinity. Appearing in different shapes and forms, just as we have different pots, red pot, blue pot, you know, short, tall, big, small. So similarly, we have different young, old, male, female, black, white. So all of us are that one cause appearing in different effects. And from the effect, when you remove the cause, thing remains, right? According to the law of cause and effect. From ornaments you remove gold, nothing remains. From pots you remove mud, nothing remains. So from this universe, if you remove God, nothing remains. So this whole universe is an expression of God, God as the cause appearing in all of them. So when I love God, I do not love him only as some abstract concept sitting somewhere or sitting in my heart. But I love him as sitting in everybody's heart. And I see him and I serve him. So when I love somebody, then I spontaneously serve them. So that is the result of either way, either whether you know God as formless or form, the end result is total identification, total love, and oneness or duality. As I said, if you see him as form, it becomes duality. You see formless, it becomes one. But the essential nature of all is the same. And so when I see God, the end result is total identification, total oneness, total love. Love not only for God, but for his entire creation. So thank you for everybody for participating and helping me today. I thought we'll do it a little different, get people more involved. And then next week we'll continue. Next week we'll be talking about God as formless. So verse number 6 is God as formless. Achintyam avyaktam anantarupam shivam prashantam and so on. So what are the qualities of formless? We'll do next week. And then the week after we'll pick a particular form. In this text, it happens to be Shiva, but you can pick any form and meditate upon that. And ultimately, they both are one. And it is that one formless appearing in different forms. This text will teach us that. Whatever you all spoke will be expounded further in this text. This text is very simple, but at the same time takes us to the highest truth. In the later verses, it becomes fairly advanced, and so it's very good to meditate on every verse. As you will go later on, you will see is very useful in meditation. Any more comments, any questions?
You know, when I'm here, I'm in front of Krishna. So when I'm doing meditation, here is who is watching, who is watching me, who is making me to focus? Lord Krishna. So when I'm in a church, if I meditate, Jesus Christ. For me, doesn't matter where I am, what form it is, it's the same. Where I am, if reaching to the formless is through the form. And when I talk to other people, they say, how could you do that? To me,
right.
He is formless. I mean, God is formless. So wherever wherever I am, I have opportunity,
right.
Or given it's privilege. To me, it's my privilege to be you know, so that helps. That helps me, and it doesn't bother me that what people think that I don't have a religion. Some people think, you know, really, you don't have a religion. That
means. Yeah, that's very good if you can do that.
Yeah.
But what they say is that ultimately, yeah, it's good when you're here, you meditate on Krishna. When you're in church, you can see Jesus. But if it's Guru Nanak is the one that you feel more close to, so then make that your number one focus. So when you're meditating alone at home, yeah, so that's what. So it is good to pick one form that it's like a lady is married in a particular home and that her husband has five brothers. So she respects all the five brothers, but she loves most only her husband. She doesn't have the same relationship with the other five brothers. She has a relationship of extreme love for her husband and others. Yes, she respects them. She loves them. She feels close to them, but does not have the same relationship. So similarly, my one God that I love has taken all these forms. And so I pick one form to love as mine. And the others all I respect because they're all brothers and sisters. They're all that one consciousness. And so that's why there's nothing wrong, you know, but in my heart that I should pick one form that I feel the closest to.
Closest to Guru Nanak.
Right.
No
so
body.
Yeah, so that
no,
right.
No
exactly, body. I know. So then it becomes easier to love. Like you see, you have the attitude of Guru. Okay, he's my Guru, he takes me to the highest. And that's wonderful. So they say pick one, but respect all. And they all take us to the same truth. See, all forms take us to the formless. So whichever form you pick, as long as you understand that this is the ice, but the water and the ice are the same. There is no difference. There is no difference between water and ice are both H2O. It is just whether it's ocean or whether it's water vapor or whether it's ice, they are all one. So it makes you less fanatic, yes.
I think I'm confused because I thought that there's a difference between focusing on something and that's not meditation. So when you focus on something, I know when I do yoga at the end we focus on the chanting and that's
right.
That's to focus your mind but that isn't meditation. And
no.
Then there's something called withdrawal of the senses. And I thought, oh my gosh, I don't even know how to withdraw my senses. So I don't think I'm meditating. I think, you know, like Chris was saying, it's going to take me maybe a whole lifetime to learn how to meditate. Because to me, when you meditate is that merging into
right.
And experiencing
right.
Whatever that is. And in my reading, and I don't know whether it was here or in the Gita, it talks about we, with our equipment, we can't know God. So when we talk about knowing God, I don't think we can.
Now that's a very good point. I was going to do it in the next class, but I'll answer your question. The best example is, say I'm in a dark room, and there is a blanket, and the blanket is covering a pot, right? The blanket is covering the pot, and I cannot see the pot. So somehow I make myself up to the blanket, and I remove the blanket. I still cannot see the pot. I have to shine a light to see the pot, right? I take a flashlight, and with the flashlight, I'm able to see the pot. So that is uncovering the blanket, reveals the pot, but I still cannot see the pot. I need a flashlight. But suppose there is a lamp, you know, an electric light, which is completely covered by the blanket, and the room is pitch dark, and I cannot see the light. So what do? I remove the blanket, I uncover the blanket. Now that lamp, do I need a flashlight to see that lamp? No, the lamp is lit. The lamp is lit. I do not need a flashlight to see that lamp, to see that light. So all I have to do is remove the blanket and then the light reveals itself, right? The light reveals itself. I do not need another flashlight. So what have I done? I have just removed the blanket. And once I remove the blanket, the light reveals itself. So, like you said, our body, mind, and intellect equipment cannot know God. Right? And you are right over there. Then what is the use of the body, mind, and intellect? Why did I get it? And then why are we coming to this class? Why are we studying? Studying is like removing the blanket. So when I meditate, I first of all have understood that there is one consciousness which is all-pervading, which is Om, or the consciousness within me. And that is the light. That is the light which illumines my body. Illumines my body, gives my body life, gives my mind the ability to feel, intellect ability to think, my body to walk, talk, and all. So this one consciousness gives me the ability. So it is the light which is illumining this body, mind, and intellect. But the light is covered by vastness, by ignorance, which is the blanket. So I do not know what is this light, what is this Brahman, this consciousness, and that's why I do not perceive it. Why don't I see it? Because I have all these negative tendencies. I have ignorance. I do not know what is the nature of that reality. So thinking about it and learning about it and sitting to meditate is like removing the blanket. So when I sit to meditate, you know, we give the seven steps. You know, you sit in a quiet place, you close your eyes, you make your back erect, you observe, you know, you relax your body, you observe your breath, you chant the mantra. So these six steps are like removing the blanket. Now, when the mind becomes completely still, when the mind becomes still through all these, through watching your breath, through chanting the mantra and all that, and once you have understood that I am that consciousness, that one thought alone should be there, I am that consciousness. And ultimately, when that mind becomes completely still, then even that thought, I am consciousness, disappears, and then that light reveals itself. So the consciousness, you cannot create that light. You cannot say, I created God, or I created Atman, or I created light. In my meditation, I created light. No. All you did was still your mind, make your mind still, and that can happen when you reduce your vasanas, when you do all the techniques of stilling the mind. And when the mind is still, and with that one thought that I am that consciousness, then ultimately the Lord reveals himself. And that is what, then you come to that understanding that the Father in heaven and I are one. Because ultimately that one Father in heaven pervades the entire universe. So that's what Jesus understood. That's what Buddha said when he talked about that state of nirvana. Nirvana means no flames. There's no flame of desire. That is nirvana, what Buddha talked about. So when there is no desire, then the mind is still. And in that still mind, which is uncovered, free from... See, what happens is when I sit for meditation, all different thoughts come. Thoughts about my family, thoughts about work, thoughts about, you know, what I'm going to do after meditation and all. So when all those thoughts are stilled, in that still mind, when that understanding that that consciousness is me, and that it does not have to be a thought, it has to be an understanding. Like that you are Barbara, is that a thought or is that an understanding? No, it's an understanding.
It's an understanding.
Yeah, I understand. I don't have to repeatedly tell myself, I'm Barbara. You don't have to go around telling all the time. You know, maybe as a child you had to be told, you know, this is your name. But ultimately it becomes automatic. As soon as you wake up, the first thought comes, you know, I am Barbara. And then somebody asks you, they wake you up in the middle of the night. You don't have to think, who are you? You automatic. So it's not a thought, it is an understanding. In the beginning, it was a thought as a child when you were 1 year old or so on. But ultimately, it becomes an understanding. So that understanding that I am that consciousness should become an understanding, not just a thought. So in that silence of the meditation, you come to that understanding that I am that consciousness, and then your mind becomes still, and that one thought alone removes all other thoughts, and ultimately that thought also disappears. And in that silence, the consciousness reveals itself. So that is meditation.
I'm hearing that to meditate, I have to have a form. So I have to think about Jesus, or I have to, you know, to picture
Krishna.
Okay, that's what I'm hearing.
Not necessarily. It depends on whether you think you are form or formless. If you say, I am form, then yeah, God has a form. But if I am formless, if I am that, then I don't need a form. But it is difficult to meditate on the formless. That's what the 12th chapter of the Gita says, Klesho adhik taras tesham avyat asakta chetasam. It is more difficult to meditate on the formless. So for most people, form is easy, but it's not required. If you can meditate on the formless, that is me, that is all pervading, there's nothing wrong with that.
So if I meditate on something like a black hole, that's still a form?
Yeah, yeah. So you meditate on the all pervading, and that is the life within me, the consciousness. And so that's why we have these mantras, I am not this body, I am not the mind, I am not the intellect. I'm not the body, I'm not the mind, I'm not the intellect, I'm not the vasanas, I am not the likes and dislikes, I'm not the objects, emotions, thoughts, I'm not the perceiver, feeler and thinker. Who am I? Chidananda Rupaha Shivoham Shivoham. I am that all-pervading consciousness. So using such mantras helps. Using such mantras takes you to that one thought that I am that all-pervading, like she meditates on Soham. That's very good. He and I are one. I am he is me. And ultimately, even that thought disappears in the silence of the... They say it's like the stick, like you use a stick to stir other sticks, right? Now you want to light the fire. Fire is not lighting. So you use one stick and move them around, shake it, and then the fire lights. And then that stick also you burn in that fire. The stick also catches fire and gets burned. So this one thought, I am that, removes all other thoughts. Removes all other thoughts. The thought of my child or my husband or my work. All thoughts are removed. And that one thought, and ultimately in that silence, when that thought also disappears, then that consciousness reveals itself. So that thought also has to be dropped.
When you said, you know, do I think of Barbara as a thought or an understanding? And I said thought because my understanding is that I am not Barbara, but I am.
That's very good. No, that's very good. If you can think of I am the consciousness, I am not Barbara, that's even further advanced. I was talking about, you know, at the worldly level. That's very good. No, that's great then. That's great. So if you can say I am that consciousness and Barbara is the thought, that's wonderful. That's good. There's nothing wrong with that. That's what, okay, if you are thinking of I am that consciousness and I'm not Barbara, then yeah, that is better. That's even better. So that understanding that I am that is removing the blanket. And then when you remove the blanket, then the light reveals itself. Then you do not need another light to reveal the light. A pot, you need another light. But a blanket does not need another light to reveal itself. You know, all you do is remove the blanket and then the light is shining. So stilling the mind, removing all these wrong notions that I am this body, I'm Barbara, I am unhappy, I'm happy, I'm successful, I'm failure, I have a lot of good habits, bad habits, I'm a very sweet person, or I'm not so sweet, I'm loving, I'm not so loving. These are all descriptions of me. I'm a doctor, engineer, I'm a man, woman. These are all descriptions. Name, form, you know, nationality, occupation, these are all relationships. I'm a mother or a father, or I'm a son or a daughter, and I have to take care of my mother after meditation. You know, that also is a thought. But when all thoughts are stilled, then the blanket is removed, then the consciousness, which is ever shining. The Lord within me is ever shining, and He always was, is, and always will be, even when this body is dropped. When I drop this body, I, the consciousness, will live forever. That's what Krishna tells Arjuna in the second chapter, that all of us are that one consciousness, so nobody dies. J- just the body is dropped. So I, that consciousness, will remain even when the body is dropped. Then such a person goes beyond death. And that is the final death. That is. So this blanket example is very good. Yes.
Now, when you say God is everything and is all over, that is, as much as God represents what is good in this world, get the cause effect of the goodness, it also represents what's bad and what bad in this world. I somehow can't see God existing in viruses and cancer cells.
Right, right.
How do you answer that?
Well, first of all, viruses and cancer cells are needed to keep the population still. See, if there was no viruses and no cancer cells, the population would keep growing, 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 and the earth would become uninhabitable. So we should be thankful to the viruses and the cancer cells that they remove people so that it creates room for more. So there is nothing good or bad, even car accident or plane accident. So terrible thing happened, 200 people died. But people have to die anyway.
Stop the population, you can not produce enough.
No, but the people will keep on producing. People are not producing. So suppose somebody is 100 and doesn't die, 150 he never dies, 200 he never dies. Earth will become overpopulated. It's good that people get old and they die. Death is not bad. In my opinion, death is good. There's nothing wrong with death. You know, we take it as something horrible. Oh, this person died. Why did he? If people don't die, if our grandfather and great-grandfather had not died, the earth would be if the dinosaurs had not died, you know, if the dinosaurs, the earth was occupied by dinosaurs and the meteor came and killed 2 million or 5 million or 10 million dinosaurs. Suppose that meteor had not come, the earth would still be populated by dinosaurs. You and I would have no space to live. So death is good. There's nothing wrong with death, number one. Number two, you say, well, is he in good people and bad people? You know, that is your question. That I can answer. As far as I'm concerned, death is good. There's nothing wrong with death. Death should be welcomed. It's okay. Especially with this knowledge, then death is nothing. Suppose tomorrow they tell me I have cancer and I have 3 months to live. If I have truly grasped that knowledge, I would be fine. If truly I have practiced what I have been speaking, if I truly, then I would be okay. Okay, in 3 months I'll go, so what? So, what's the problem? I'll take a new body, or if I'm realized, I won't take a new body. If I'm not realized, I still have to, okay, so I'll drop this body, take a new. It's like dropping old clothes. That's what Krishna tells Arjuna. He says, you just as you give up old clothes and take on new clothes, so death is the same. So why should we be afraid of death? If you're truly a Vedanta student or a student of meditation, death should be welcomed. Or it should be taken as neither welcome nor unwelcome. It's another stage. Just as from childhood I became old, I became a youth, then I became middle-aged, then I became old-age, then I drop my body, get a brand new body, you know, young, beautiful body. What's wrong with that? See, we take death as something horrible. You know, that's first thing. You have in the scriptures, he says, amritatvam anushud, na karmana na prajaya. He says, what is the goal of life? Immortality. Goal of life is immortal. And how do you become immortal? Not by living forever in this body. That is torture. If you live beyond 90 or live beyond 100, the body becomes torture, right? It is horrible to live in. If you see these people who are lying in the nursing home and 102 and 100, it's not fun. It's better to drop this body, but to understand that I am immortal, that is immortality. Immortality is not living forever. It is understanding that I live forever, that I am immortal, that is the goal of life, to realize I am immortal, I am not mortal. So death, so viruses, cancer and all is good, nothing wrong with them. They are required to keep the population in check. Car accidents, plane crashes, they're all required. Earthquakes, tornadoes, you know, it's so good. Nothing wrong with that. That's how God keeps the population in check. That's number one. You may not agree, but I don't think death is bad. But the second question is God in there in good and bad people, both. So the answer is God is like the gasoline in the car. Now the gasoline in the car, you can take the car to the church and pray, or you can take it to the bar and get drunk, or you can take it to a house of prostitution. The car you can take anywhere. You can take it to the church, you can take it to the bar to get drunk, or you can take it to a house of prostitution. The gasoline does not decide where you take the car. Right? Does the gasoline tell you to this morning, I want to go to church, it's Sunday morning? No. You decide where you are going to take the car. So similarly, the ego decides where I'm going to take the BMI today. Am I going to take it to the church, or am I going to take it to a bar to get drunk, or am I going to take it to a house of prostitution? The Lord within does not tell me where to take. God, so similarly, God is equally there in the saint as he is in the murderer. He's equally there in both. He gives the energy to the saint to preach, and he gives energy to the murderer to stab or to shoot. God does not tell you what you should do with your equipment. You choose whether you want to kill or you want to love. So God is there in everybody. He was there as much in Hitler and as much in Saddam Hussein as he was in Mahatma Gandhi, as he was in Jesus. It's not that God was more in Jesus and less in Hitler. He was equal. He gave energy to both. It is how they use the energy. So God is the energy. God is there in everything, but it is the substratum, the support, the energy. Based on my vasanas, the human beings have been given the freedom to act. An animal doesn't have a freedom. A lion cannot say, I'm going to become a vegetarian lion from tomorrow and love everybody. You know, lion will eat meat. He will kill the deer and eat, while a cow will eat grass. So the consciousness is the same. Depending on my vasanas, a human being can be good or bad. So humans have been given the freedom to choose. And so God is equally there in good and bad, but what he has done, the mistake he made, or I won't call it a mistake, whatever, he gave freedom to man. He said, I'm making man in my own image, and I'm going to give him freedom to choose. So man has been given freedom, and it's how we misuse the freedom, how we use it or misuse it, makes the world good or bad. The world is good or bad based on man's tendencies, man's vastness. Because men have been given the freedom, and ever since men been given the freedom, you know, they have made this world into a mess. And ultimately there will be a nuclear holocaust and the world will end, and then the world will start all over again. Does that answer your question? Yes.
Isn't a piece of that also in the free choice? There's a natural law of consequences, which is karma. So there's
yes.
like things like illness and all that stuff is karma. And it's like, it's actually easier than when you see it that way, because nobody gets away with murder.
Right.
Nobody, and everyone who has an experience is usually based on karmic debt.
True.
From a previous life.
Yeah.
And so you look at it that way, you're like, you don't, I mean, you can have empathy, but it doesn't mean you have to feel sorry, because we all have our things to go through.
Yeah, that's the continuation of my talk. Yeah, the emphasis on karma. Yes, then you make your choices. You make good or bad actions, and as a result of that, you get good or bad results. So based on my karma, I get the results. But God, again, has no part of the karma. He does not share in the good results or share in the bad results. He say, you did the good and bad results, the ego, you suffer the consequences. He's not involved. God is not involved, he's just the energy. Like the gasoline is not involved where you take your car. So think of him as gasoline. And then you say, if I take the car to the church, I will be peaceful. If I take it to a bar, I get drunk, I'll be arrested. And if I take it to a house of prostitution, I'll get all the diseases. So you reap the gasoline doesn't get the disease. And the gasoline doesn't get the happiness of the going to the church. The gasoline says, I don't care. Depending whether you go to church or bar or there, you will get the consequences.
You know, that's exactly the problem with believing in a formless God, is energy, consciousness. You can say many things. But it's very hard to live without thinking there is somebody above there who loves you for who you are and what you're trying to do. And that's why I think his method of believing in God is much better than my method of believing in God.
Right.
And I'm speaking for him, but he truly believes that if you live a good life and you believe in God, God chooses to love you and have good things happen to you versus another person. And he says the differences between Arjuna and Duryodhana, both were equally related to Sri Krishna, but
mm-hmm.
did Sri Krishna prefer Arjuna versus Duryodhana? And that's his justification for why I mean, you reach the ultimate whichever way you go.
Right.
I mean,
true.
I think somewhere in Mahabharata or somewhere it says, what is important is that your mind should dwell in God. In love or in anger, you know, all those people who hated God and wanted to kill him still went to merge with the ultimate.
Right.
You can hate God and still.
Right.
So, I mean, it's all a whole lot of things, but it's a very, very difficult, very, how shall I say, emotionless thing to think that God is energy, God is like gasoline. You know what I'm saying? We're
right.
not built to.
No, energy
like
means he's the energy within me.
I know.
When I say energy,
say
it's not formless.
Why should he love you? He doesn't care. He doesn't. We say he. The
right.
energy doesn't care. It just is.
Yeah,
big
but
difference.
But the example also that I have given many times is, suppose there is a fireplace.
Mm-hmm.
I've given that example in the church hall. Now one person is close to the fireplace, and another one is far away, and the room is very cold. The one who is close to the fireplace says, oh, it's so nice and warm. And the one who is far away is cursing the cold. The fireplace doesn't love me. The fireplace doesn't love me. Why am I, is making me cold? The fireplace says, you come close to me, you will experience my warmth. The fireplace does not love one person and hate another person. The fireplace says, I love everybody equally. But the one who is close to me will feel my warmth. So God is like that. He loves everybody. But the one who thinks God is close to me, experiences God's love. All you have to do is bring him close, whether it's form or formless, doesn't matter. He's closer than the closest. He's within me. And then automatically you will develop love. But you're true, it is easier to love God with the form, but you can love him as formless too. Love him as in all the birds and all the plants, and love him as the life, as consciousness. And be all the time grateful that it is because of God's presence that I'm able, like I'm talking at this moment, because God is there. If I think that I am speaking and I know so much, then the ego comes in. But if you truly are, truly know God, then you will say, God is speaking, and I'm so grateful to my guru and to God that I have this knowledge. So
there's one thing more I want to say,
yeah.
Virus and cancer and all that. You know, in this society, we are used to people getting treated and people getting well. I watched my parents die, and it occurred to me at that time that people die. When people die, there is always a diagnosis, always a modality of treatment that you can push it to the nth degree. But at some point, either the body gives up, or the treatment doesn't work, or you can find fault with every doctor in the area. It's like, at
mm-hmm.
what point do you accept death? It's not easy. It's not even easy to tell when it happens.
Right.
But death comes to everybody, and I think it's a more graceful way of living if you always remember that there is death. It will come.
Right.
It will come with the diagnosis. It will come with some treatments. And sometimes you embrace it, and sometimes you say, where is it taking me? It's difficult when you live through it to keep this in mind for the doctors and for the
right.
patient
right.
and families.
Yeah, Swami Chinmayananda, our guru, his guru, was living in the Himalayas, very far from medical care, near a river. He was living in a small hut, and he got sick. And our guru, Swami Chinmayananda, by that time had become very successful. He had a lot of followers. And so he went to see his guru, and guru was on the deathbed. And he tells the guru that I would like to take you to Delhi, because by that time he had enough followers. He said, one of my followers will bring a helicopter, will transport you to Delhi, and will get you good medical care. And so his guru says, he says, you mean to tell me people don't die in Delhi? You know, that time Delhi was the big city where you could get medical care, and he was lying by the river with no doctor, no medicine, nothing. So he said, but transporting me to Delhi, can you guarantee that I will not die? No. Ultimately, we all have to die. He said, I'd rather die peacefully in the Himalayas, by the Ganga River, and with the Himalayas in the peaceful atmosphere, rather than tied to an IV in some hospital bed, you know, in Delhi. So death is inevitable. Whoever is born will die. In the Gita, in the second chapter, Krishna says, whoever is born will die. So then what is to grieve? It is inevitable. If not today, maybe 10 years from now, or 30 years from now, or 40 years from now, we all will die. It's meant to happen. Somebody dies early with a car accident, somebody dies at 80 with cancer. So it doesn't matter. Death is not so bad. Now today we'll meditate on the formless, that is all pervading, that is me.